Okay, well, next we move to agenda item 6, or 7, the estate forest management plan. Liz and Cecil, get this off.
Raise your hand up.
So,
there we have it.
Yes. Good afternoon, Chair Amundson, State Forestry Authority, members of the board. For the record, my name is Liz Dent, and I serve as the State Forest Division Chief. Today, we are continuing our work on the Forest Management Plan project in alignment with the direction that you provided to us in January. The board, and so with that, I think we will move on to the next slide. Before really getting into it, I wanted to acknowledge that this is a team effort. We don't have a large team, but they are covering a lot of work. They're responsible for the assessment of the issues and the development of the recommendations that are set up with this project, setting this project up for success. So they include Justin Buttress here with me at the table today, our policy analyst, Cindy Kulamanchek, our project leader, Mike Toady, our district forester from West Oregon District, Mike Wilson is our information unit manager, Rosemary Nanix is our resource specialist unit manager, Kevin Boyd, our asset unit manager, Ty Williams is our assistant district forester in the Astoria District, and Jason Cox is our public affairs specialist. So a little overview of how we're going to walk through the presentation today. I'm going to start with an update on what recent news for our habitat conservation plan work, and then I'm going to recap the direction that you provided to us in January. I will then go through the material that we developed following that direction, including the guiding principles, how we are describing and defining conservation and financial viability. We'll then move into the work you asked us to do around measurable outcomes and the framework for an impacts analysis. So a little bit of an update on the habitat conservation plan. When we spoke with you last, we were awaiting the news as to whether we received the grant that we had applied for. And the good news is that we did. And so that, just as a reminder, that's a grant that comes from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and is passed through the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And it's an HCP planning assistance grant. And it brings in for us the $750,000 in federal funds that we will match with our own $250,000 of state funds. We're going to use this work to scope out a multi-species HCP on all of our state forest lands that are west of the Cascade, with the exception of some of the ownership around the Elliott State Forest. In this initial year, again, we've talked to you about this, but just by way of reminder, we're going to conduct a business analysis to determine if an HCP is in the best interest of the state. We're going to be able to utilize the funds to help us gather data for a baseline data assessment and fill some data gaps that we think we may have, and to invest in a robust process of engagement with our stakeholders. This effort will be guided by a steering committee that is comprised of decision makers from important partners in this process, so from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, National Marine Fisheries Service, ODFW, OSU, DEQ, and DSL. That's the steering committee. Again, they're responsible for decision making and direction for this work. Representation is at the high level in these organizations, and so getting alignment and direction from that team is going to help us succeed. We've also formed a scoping team from those same organizations, but in this case, drawing on the technical experts. And again, ODFW, National Marine Fisheries Service, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So the next step will be to work with a consultant to develop a stakeholder engagement process that will likely take shape in early fall and will continue into phases 2 and 3 as we describe them to you. The board directs us to continue our work towards developing an HCP. So we are on track and on time to complete this phase 1 work by November. So that is an update on the HCP. And if there's no questions, I will move on to the work at hand. So So start with a recap of the direction that we received from the January Board of Forestry meeting. You directed us to draft a set of guiding principles to define conservation and financial viability, to add measurable outcomes and an impacts analysis to the planning process. You also suggested that to the extent possible, we begin populating the forest management plan content table. And a little spoiler alert here, we did not have the resources to begin populating that table. So more to come on that. As we contemplated conservation and financial viability, so as I walked through this presentation, I just want to set the stage here, we really found the greatest value for us was to anchor back into the mandates and descriptions that exist in our grace permanent value rule. And so, and then furthermore, in developing those, felt like the best way to codify those for the long term was to actually fold those into the guiding principles. So as I go through the presentation, I'm going to be going through the guiding principles, and I'll take a little off-ramp to help you understand how we got to those definitions of conservation and financial viability, and then bring us back in, and we'll go through the rest of the guiding principles. Then I'll turn it over to Justin, and Justin's going to present the framework that's been developed for the measurable outcomes, and then we'll close with the impacts analysis. So before diving into the guiding principles, I do think it's valuable to ground this conversation in the context of multiple aspects or elements of the forest management planning process. We've been talking to you about this, using this table as a tool, so you're becoming increasingly familiar with it as it was first presented in January. As a reminder, and so it reads, you know, from left to right, grace, permanent value, guiding principles, goals, strategies. Now we'll be talking as well about measurable outcomes, quantifiable targets, and standards. So as a reminder, the asterisks on this table identify the components of that are required to be in the forest management plan layout in our forest management planning rule. So as I get into the guiding principles here, I think it's helpful to think about how these all relate to each other, and I think an easiest way for me to describe it is that the grace permanent value rule and guiding principles are general in nature, and so as you move from left to right, you get into more specificity. And together, this set of components here really provides, I would say, a robust framework for forest management planning and adaptive management. So, moving into guiding principles, we've developed 10 principles and that articulate the legal mandates that are required on state forest lands and that reflect the board's policy. And in an overarching sense, the principles focus on greatest permanent value, financial viability, and conservation. They speak to the pace and scale of management, the collaboration with public, other state agencies, and federal agencies, compliance with other laws such as the Endangered Species Act, forest restoration and watershed restoration, and as well as the trade-offs that are inherent in forest management. And so here's that list. And so beginning with guiding principle one, this principle addresses the overall policy direction that is found in statute and rule to manage state forest lands for the greatest permanent value to the state and the requirements of the forest management plan as stated in the forest management planning rule. So guiding principle really looks at those rules, pulls out maybe some of the most salient points, and stitches those pieces together to really establish that that is the platform upon which we make our decisions. In terms, it also calls out the management of common school forest lands. While we're not managing the Elliott, we're still managing a little over 30,000 acres of common school forest land. The mandates for those forests are codified in constitutional language and focus on revenue generation as well as benefits to the people of Oregon. And so guiding principle one captures those mandates. So moving to the conservation and financial viability, again, here's my segue. As part of the Phase 1 Forest Management Plan work plan, we committed to developing definitions for financial viability and conservation. And the rationale was to ensure that we all have a common understanding of what the terms mean, specifically in the context of the board's objectives, and then ultimately, of course, how that played out in terms of the Forest Management Plan itself. So you will have seen in the materials that we ultimately based our conservation definition and conservation principles and in great permanent value and the, as I said, the forest management planning rule. In terms of financial viability, we are anchoring that to generating sufficient funds or sufficient revenue to implement the forest management plan and meet the mandates of greatest permanent value. So I'll spend a few minutes walking you through that logic train. So first, looking at conservation. There are many ways to define conservation, and there's an attachment in which we kind of sort of dive into that a little bit, and it can be as sort of simple as the Merriam-Webster dictionary definition, which may sort of feel a little bit lackluster in the context of what we need to be doing on state forests, or something much more broad as in an international definition for conservation that's widely accepted at that scale. But both of those lack the focus that we need in the context for which we're making our management decisions on state forests. So the natural place, and I would say almost the mandatory place for us to look at how to define conservation is really in our greatest permanent value and our planning rules. Those rules are attached verbatim to, I believe it is attachment two. So you'll have those in your packet to reference over time. But I thought I would capture a few of the high points here in the presentation. So, greatest permanent value results in a healthy, productive, and sustainable forest ecosystems that over time and across the landscape provide the full range of social, economic, and environmental benefits to the people of Oregon. So that's an overarching premise and key driver in our decisions for managing state forests. We've talked quite a bit about the forest management planning rule as we were considering the FMP content table, and so we referenced that in terms of here's what's required in the forest management plan. But the planning rule also articulates quite nicely a set of objectives for conservation as well. So we're really drawing on those two sets of rules for our thinking. So I'll hit on some of those examples. So in terms of greatest permanent value, some of the conservation principles that we've brought forward or that we can anchor to include sustainably harvesting our forests, maintain and restore properly functioning aquatic habitats for native fish and wildlife, protect, maintain, and enhance habitat for native wildlife, protect soil, air, and water. So those are some examples. It's not an exhaustive list. In your attachment with the verbatim rule language, we've put in bold text the areas that we think speak directly to conservation. In terms of the planning rule, there's more ideas that are brought forward, including contributing to biological diversity, managing the forest for a variety of forest conditions, conserve and maintain genetic diversity. It acknowledges that forests are dynamic, and the quality and quantity of habitats for species will change spatially and temporally, and highlights the importance of integrated pest management to manage insect and disease. So again, these are just highlights. The attachment provides the full text of the rule language. So we looked at all of that and felt that that is a robust treatment of conservation in both the GPB and planning rules, and decided not to recreate the wheel, but instead to borrow those principles directly from GPB to frame up an overarching definition that could be established as a guiding principle. And so that this is the one that we've drafted in Guiding Principle 2, which reads that state forests will be managed, conserved, and restored to provide overall biological diversity of state forest lands, including the variety of habitats for native fish and wildlife, the accompanying ecological processes. Greatest permanent value and forest management planning rules are the board's expression of providing conservation. So again, we're proposing that these rules can be the board's expression of what it means to provide conservation on state forests, and that provision can be made one of the guiding principles for the plan itself. So turning to financial viability, we've characterized financial viability in a similar way as we thought about conservation. We are characterizing financial viability in terms of what it means to implement and provide the benefits of greatest permanent value for people in Oregon. And so we're quite simply saying it's the ability to generate sufficient income to provide services that support greatest permanent value. In the current business model, 98% of revenue is from the sale of timber, and all Board of Forestry expenditures and revenues are managed in the Forest Development Fund. So, and again, we are proposing that that be adopted as guiding principle 3 in the set of guiding principles. So coming back to our list of guiding principles, you had material and a chance to read it all, so I'm really just going to hit the high level here. The fourth guiding principle describes social benefits, including financial contributions to counties and local taxing districts, recreation, employment, public participation, ecosystem services, and recognizing that those also provide social benefits. The fifth guiding principle acknowledges that forest and watershed restoration are critical in terms of contributing to greatest permanent value. You will recall that at the Board of Forestry retreat last October, the division introduced a new strategic initiative for the board that is specifically designed to look at the needs of restoration in our Tillamook State Forest in response to the planting of off-site seed post-fire, the then resulting disease that's occurring from Swiss neocasts and the underproductive alders, recognizing the limitation that that's creating for us on that forest and needing the opportunity and focus on restoration in that forest. Watershed restoration component of this guiding principle directly comes from the existing guiding principle in the Forest Management Plan, which also identifies the importance of this. And the opportunities to collaborate with the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board and other efforts to achieve our goals. Guiding Principle 6 addresses the pace and scale of plan implementation and acknowledges that to deliver the appropriate blend of environmental, economic, and social benefits, the plan may be implemented in a variety of ways over time and across the landscape. So the same thing is not going to be happening in the same place at all times, everywhere. Principle 7 acknowledges that there will be trade-offs and constraints based on the ability of revenues to help pay for the implementation of the plan and the benefits that it provides. The 8th principle states that the plan will meet other state and federal laws and rules. Principle 9 highlights the importance of developing the plan with input from interested stakeholders. And finally, Principle 10 promotes collaborative efforts to achieve the goals of the Forest Management Plan. So given the requirement to develop guiding principles, we have proposed that conservation and financial viability definitions be codified in those principles, and our recommendation is that you approve the draft guiding principles, including guiding principle 2 and 3, which describe the expectations for financial viability and conservation. So before moving on, and at the end of the meeting, our this agenda item, we'll go back through all the recommendations, but just wanting to set the stage for that. But before I turn it over to Justin, I'm happy to answer any questions you might have about the guiding principles.
Chris, Tom, the process that we're going to go through here is they're going to present hearing of public testimony, then we'll talk about the content.
Right. So I think now it would be more in the way of clarifying questions.
Yeah. Okay, I'll turn it over to Justin.
Thanks, Liz. Good afternoon, Chair Emerson, State Forest Majority, members of the board. For the record, I'm Justin Buttress, the policy analyst for State Forest and FMD project manager. I apologize. State Forest curse here. The voice and that Ty Williams that was in the seat last month with the same situations, but I think we'll be able to get through it. So attachment 3 describes, in addition to all of the other planning terms that we've been covering, we initially presented in January, the addition of the measurable outcomes term, which was requested to be added in January by the board. So measurable outcomes are the quantifiable results of strategies. And companions to those measurable outcomes are quantifiable targets. So these quantifiable targets are established to measure progress toward a desired outcome. The target may change with new information, allowing adaptive management to be applied to manage practices and the outcomes they are intended to achieve. So to walk through an example, moving left to right through this table, again, Liz mentioned the terms marked with the asterisks are the ones that are required by the forest management planning rule to be included in the forest management plan. The others are optional. So the highest level policy direction is given through the greatest permanent value rule, which calls for, in this example, timber harvest to be pursued in a broader management context that protects, maintains, and enhances native wildlife habitats, among other aspects. The current plan has a guiding principle recognizing the goal for managing the state forest lands is to secure or raise permanent value, and we proposed a continuation of that guiding principle, number one. So the guiding principle points back to the mandates of GPV and the planning rule. A specific goal that contributes to securing raised permanent value is to contribute to a range of wildlife habitat types. And a strategy that will help achieve this goal is to incorporate legacy structure at the landscape level. The quantifiable result of implementing this strategy would be the number of large trees across the landscape over time. And we can measure progress toward meeting that desired outcome by establishing a quantifiable target. Through monitoring, we could measure the number and size of trees and evaluate if we're meeting the desired outcome of at least 3 trees per acre that are at least 32 inches in diameter, and at least 1 tree that is at least 4 inches in diameter. And finally, we need an operational standard that is expected to result in the desired outcome over time. For example, retaining 5 live green trees per acre when we conduct regeneration harvests. So this allows for an effective adaptive management framework to be implemented. If we find that there are an insufficient or excessive number of legacy trees across the landscape over time, the standard could be adjusted to reflect changes in management needed to ensure we met the desired outcome. Additionally, if the body of knowledge changes regarding what the desired outcome is, we can change the quantifiable target and if needed, the standard. So a lot of information there. I want to make sure you all have opportunities to ask any questions if you have any at this point. So moving on to the impacts analysis. So table 1 in the staff report presents an approach to impacts analysis that we're proposing. With this framework, the division would compare its proposed alternative approach to the current FMB and describe the impacts in the context of greatest permanent value. We built off the symbology that was vetted and developed through the independent science panel that was convened during the stakeholder proposals, the analysis of the stakeholder proposals and the AFB. This framework examines the impacts in 3 ways. First, it indicates the direction of the impact, so there's the alternative resulting more or less of the thing that we're evaluating. whether that change, the more or less, is beneficial or detrimental. So, for example, you could be getting less of a bad thing, which is actually beneficial. And then the certainty associated with the assessment of that change. So arrows pointing up indicate increases, and pointing down indicate decreases. Solid green arrows indicate beneficial changes, and hollow red arrows indicate detrimental changes. And thick arrows indicate high certainty, and thin arrows indicate low certainty. There's also the set of symbols here in the middle that indicate no change, or mixed bag sorts of changes where you might have an overall increase, but certain things are decreasing within the analysis. So this framework will present important summary information about the impacts and facilitate the expedited process that we're working through. Excuse me. So to provide a couple of examples of how this might work, and definitely want to highlight these are really intended to just be examples. We're not proposing anything here today. And the text in bold is not indicating any sort of real change or anything. Just we're thinking about, for the purposes of the example, if we were to change for economic outcomes in this example. So using the framework to evaluate change to the outcomes associated with legacy structure outcomes or retention strategies, excuse me. So the hypothetical change is proposed to result in improved economic outcomes in this example. So you can see in the final column a green thin up arrow indicating that it would be a positive upward increase. You'd have positive, beneficial economic outcomes associated with that change. That's what we're intending to show here, since this is a change for economic outcomes. But that's a low certainty associated with that, with a thin arrow. For the environmental category, indicating mixed changes with less certainty, shown with those parallel sideways arrows. And then for social, indicating no significant change with the equal sign. As a second example, looking at riparian buffers and aquatic anchors, if we were to consider a change to the riparian buffer for environmental outcomes, we might expect that there would be a detrimental decrease to economic outcomes with high certainty, as indicated by the downward red hollow arrow. But your beneficial increase to the environmental category with high certainty, indicated with the green solid thick upward arrow. Again, social, no significant change. And these are just examples, so I encourage everyone to not read too far into any of that. So that's how, in practice, the impacts analysis framework would be used to analyze our actual proposed changes compared to the current FMP to inform how those might impact the three-legged stool that is greatest permanent value. So our recommendation on those two topics is to approve the definition of measurable outcomes and approve the impacts analysis framework. So again, a lot of information there. I want to pause if there are any questions I can answer.
We have a full list here of recommendations. I will walk through this quickly, and then I think we will shift to public comment. But they are to approve the draft guiding principles, including guiding principle 2 and 3, which describe the board's perspective on financial viability and conservation, approve the definition of measurable outcomes, approve the impacts analysis framework, and direct us to continue our work with the forest management plan revision process. That concludes our presentation.